Hi, I'm Ken. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Good to be here. Good to be trusted. You left your pocketbook up here, honey. I thought he was cubing steaks. This is just like the adults. We get to stay up and everything. Isn't this fun? I want to thank Charlie for inviting me to come up and also treating me and the gang that came up with me, making us feel welcome, which is always nice when you come out of town. And I want to thank all the folks who came up with me. It was, you heard of the Magnificent Seven? We were the Insignificant Seven. We were just coming along, tooling along the highway. I don't know. I was listening to the two speakers that were up here prior to my coming up here, and it seems like, you know, so much of this disease is perception and hearing. And I used to listen to people, but I never heard really what they were saying, you know, and people used to talk in it. I didn't relate to it. I remember my wife used to say the silliest things. She used to say things like, "That's your second drink." And I would say, "Honey, why don't you just forget me and finish your breakfast?" And she'd wake me up in the middle of the night and say, "There's somebody outside." And I'd say, "That's where they belong, you know?" when they're in the living room, give me a shove. It just doesn't make any sense. And you know, I'm sober a while, and that's still the way things are. I had my car stolen in March a month ago, and the policeman came and he was filling out a report. And you know, I hope there's no law enforcement people, but I think the form that they used is made up by one of us. He asked a very technical question, like, "Who was the last one to see your vehicle?" I said, "The guy who took it." His response to that is, "These are serious questions." My response was, "That's a serious answer." You know? I mean, who else would have seen it last? You know? And then he asked me three questions that, you know, you just say, "Who's working on these forms?" The first one is, "Where can you be reached during the day?" So I gave a phone number. He said, "Who is your employer?" I told him. He said, "What's their number?" Same number. He says, "Do you have a work number?" I said, "I'll give it to you, but it's going to sound awfully familiar." I mean, I got through school totally unscarred by education, but you know, I pick up on this stuff. And I hang out with guys where we have these in-depth AA discussions. Somebody said recently, "Why is there a light on the vacuum cleaner?" To which the other guy replied, "In case the electricity goes off." I was even overheard a conversation the other day where a guy and his wife were trying to have children, and the guy he was checking with said, "You know, there's a good chance if your parents didn't have children, you won't either." I do that to give you the essence of my environment, you know, this is where I hang out. And you know, it's an amazing thing today because I really only have one appointment in my life today, and that appointment is with the present moment. You know, I try to keep my life in a deal where I keep my appointment with the present moment. And the only thing that I see that alcoholics of my ilk have trouble with is we forget. And when we forget, we do things that we should have remembered. You know? And are you okay? Are you all right? I realize we've been in the van a long time, but I hope we didn't come through some time warp. But you know, like, people want to talk about real alcohol. I don't know what a real alcoholic is to you, but I drank like what appeared to be a real alcoholic. You know, I drank stuff that not only hit the spot, it removed it. You know, like, it was that kind of drinking, you know. I don't know. I mean, my mom used to say the only time you ever said no to a drink is if you misunderstood the question. So I think that kind of puts me into an alcoholic realm. I used to end sentences with the word the. And it's hard to communicate with somebody when they're talking like that, you know? And yet people try to, you know, particularly law enforcement people. They expect you to remember a lot of stuff. And when I got here, I thought, geez, this thing is so simple. This big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the owner's manual, is so simple that a bozo like me, unscarred by education, can read this and understand it. It seems like the folks who have the most trouble with it are folks who have the most education, because they read stuff that just isn't there, you know? And guys like me, we're so busy concentrating on the words that are there, we don't have time to make up the other stuff. And one of the things that I like about this book is that, you know, Bill Wilson at one time in one of his writings, he raised the question about spiritual awakening, and he said, is sobriety the only thing that comes as a result of the spiritual awakening? And then he answered his own question by saying, no, it's only the first gift of the first awakening. And what comes next is a growth utilizing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to get into a life that you would have never known otherwise. And that basically has been my path over the last 24 plus years, is that I've been in that path of growing in ways that I didn't even know I needed to grow. I used to be quick to tell a story when I got here, like most people, and I used to say, I lost everything and I was left with nothing. And now that I'm here a while, I can see that the everything that I lost was nothing. And the nothing that I was left with has turned out to be everything. And I can't see that in the first 5 or 10 or 15 years. I don't want to scare the newcomers. But you're so busy as I was developing the props of life. I had lost the props. Prior to AA, I had lost all the props. So when I got sober, I began to accumulate props again. I began to accumulate what seemed to give me security, and I began to rise up on what's called the financial ladder. And when I got to the top of that financial ladder, I realized it was on the wrong wall. You know, I was in the wrong place doing the wrong things, and that I was dressing up the outside, but on the inside I was wanting. I was just wanting, and I didn't know what for. And people kind of directed me all the time from the get-go into the fact that this is a spiritual program. And if you're not growing spiritually, you're basically dying. And when you come in, it's real important, and you folks do it so well here, is you keep people busy. You know, you don't let them think with their mind, you let them think with their feet. And, you know, you keep pushing them into commitments, and that's great. And then there comes a time when that is enough for a while, but then it's not enough anymore. There's a void there. And you have to kind of go through these steps. And going through these steps, what happens is, for most people, I know for me, is you get in touch with reality. And I never knew what reality was. And you become real aware of what I call impermanence. That everything is coming and going. There's absolutely nothing in my life staying the same. And if I'm going to try to maintain that, I'm going to run into a lot of problems. My friend Roy showed me a t-shirt, which I subsequently bought because I'm a real crazy person in this area. But it's a no fear t-shirt. And on the back it says, if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space. And you know? And in AA, we should be aware of the fact that we all are living on the edge. No matter what we think we're building, we're always living on the edge, because it can change just like that. And when it changes, it's not the props. It's not where I live, how I work, or where I work, or what I do. It's how am I inside? Can I sustain and be comfortable and be positive and grow spiritually through this deal, whatever it is. In my own life, I've learned to do that, and I learned to do it in these rooms. And I've learned it to do people with people who look just like you. You know, I've learned to keep my commitment with the present moment. And my job today, it's a full-time job, is I try to constantly let go of the life that I have planned, which is filled with desires and wants and all kinds of nonsense, and I try to enjoy the life that's readily available to me if I just let go of that stuff. And it's taken, you know, a few years. I don't believe, maybe you can do it right away. Maybe you can have one of those glowing spiritual experiences. But even after you have that, there has to be something that carries you forward. And in my life, it's been a real good growth period. And you go through all kinds of trauma. I was listening to the speaker talking about his son, and I had a son who was out touring the world in 1993, singing on a cruise ship, doing something he always wanted to do. This was something he always wanted to do. And this was a youngster that I had raised through his latter 10, 12, 13 years on up through his teen years and through his college years. I was a single parent, and I raised this boy. And he went off and he was doing something he really enjoyed doing. And I got a call that he was sick and they were sending him home. And when he arrived home in July of 93, he was in full-blown AIDS. And he had gone from 190 pounds down to about 140 pounds. And over the next 2 months, I was able to be there for him every minute of every day simply because I learned the drill here. Not someplace else. I learned the drill here. And what happened was he lost his eyesight and his hearing and he just deteriorated. And through that, I got to see what God meant for me all along. And that is to live moment to moment and not waste a moment with someone you love because you may not have that moment again. And I got to realize that God has a great sense of humor because during that time, my ex-wife came back to the house to visit. I got to meet my husband-in-law. I mean, my son one night had been in high fever, and we packed him in ice, and his mom was there, and his brother was there, and he woke up, and God love him, he sustained a great sense of wellness and humor throughout the whole deal. And he said, "My gosh, I'm having a vision of a nuclear family." And he was able to see the reality of where we were at. And it's a funny thing that during that period of time, I got to find out that there's more than a 24-hour day. I got to find out there are intense hours and intense minutes, and that you just learn to be there. He had neuropathy and couldn't sleep, and so I'd crawl into bed and just hold him. And there's something about holding a 29-year-old son that you raised that you never thought you'd go through this with, or anything where it was he'd be ahead of you in the line, so to speak. And you learn an awful lot about the depth of what you picked up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when he ended up in the hospice program and he came conscious on the last day, he thanked us for being there. And he said how he was ready to go. How this thing was ready to go. And I learn about moment to moment. There are times in my life when I've been oblivious to major things going on. But during this thing, I heard my heart tick, every tick that it ticked, because we were just there. The commitment was there. And I saw what AA could do to people who were in crisis. They just came to my house, people here tonight, they just came to my house and they made meals and they cleaned and they did wash and they helped out in ways that some of them don't even do for themselves. And it was a commitment of love. And you know, in the 10th step of Alcoholics Anonymous, we talk about love and we talk about tolerance. And that's our code. And there comes a point here where you don't need the tolerance because you've developed the love. You know, you just don't need the tolerance anymore. It's not about judging anyone from where they're at. It's just about living life and living it uproariously, you know, and having a good time and laughing at everything, because there's a lot to be laughed at. You know, you see things in life and you just wonder, and then you have to add some humor because people are in crisis all the time. A couple of weeks ago, a woman jumped ahead of me, I was in the Walmart line, and she was on this long line, and I just walked up, and the guy was going to take me. And so she came from the corner of my eye with this cart. And I didn't see her in the 10th step. It wasn't love and tolerance. It was just like, I'm going to be there first. And when I saw her coming, I stepped back and waved her on. Come on, come on. You know, like, come on, we've been saving this for you. Get here, hurry up. You know? And I, oh, yeah, you're first. All right, good. You know. And it was like, you know, because that's where she needed to be. She had probably had a real stressful day, and in reality, she deserved to be ahead of me. I was just newly there. I just moved in kind of thing. And then I watched her watching me, and she wanted to say something, but it was too tense. You know, she... And so she was like, you know, verging on an amend of some kind. And finally, she paid with a check, and the clerk took the thing, and he stamped it, and he said, what's your phone number? And I said, don't give it to him. He's not going to call you anyway. And she just started to laugh, you know. And then I knew everything was okay, you know. And she just forgot, you know. She had just forgot. Life was stressed out, and she had just forgot. And that's what it's about sometimes. We just forget. And we come to these meetings because they slow us down and they help us to remember. And this world is real crazy sometimes. And some of the people in it are real crazy. And you have to come here and be with organized insanity in order to go out and cope with the disorganized insanity, you know? And it's like you get so, you just are more and more and more relaxed. And there's nothing to understand. And I watch people doing things today because I used to do the same things. And it's like watching people like housekeeping in a dream. You know, it's totally useless. You know, it's like moving into a motel and rearranging the furniture. You know, you're not there that long. You know, like you're just passing through. And getting a vested interest in what seems to be real. And then finding out that that's not what's real at all. What's real for me has been my recovery. What's real for me are the friends in my life. What's real for me is the love I get to share. And if someone were to come in and take everything materially that I have, they couldn't do anything to me because I'd still be me and I'd still be okay. And I didn't get that by hanging out on the corner doing what we did. You know, I got that in here. I remember my mom used to say, why don't you just go get a job and try to do something that's not indictable. And my mom understood that I had a mind that just saw things differently because we had a 12-inch Admiral TV at that time back in the early 50s, and my mom would walk from the kitchen through the living room, and if I was sitting there and the TV was off and I was thinking, she'd slap me. And I don't mean slap me, she'd hit me and say, stop that, because she knew I was thinking. And my mom used to say, every time you think, you play some part of the world in jeopardy. You know, like that. Because this stuff would just sound so good to me, you know. And it, you know, at one time I thought I could make a fortune selling hearing aids over the telephone. I mean, that's, you know, it sounds okay up here, but it just doesn't relate to anything. You know, it just doesn't relate to anything. And I remember a story told of these three alcoholics, and I think it typifies where I'm at. And these three alcoholics were in a mental institution. And it was time for them to go home. And before they went home, they had to appear before the psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist says, I'm going to ask you one question, and then you can go home if you answer it correctly. So he said to the first one, how much is 3 times 3? And the guy looked at him and said, 118. He said, I think you got to stay just a tad longer. Then he said to the second guy, how much is 3 times 3? And the guy said, Tuesday. Defiantly, you know. He said, just a little bit longer for you also. Then he went to the third guy and he said, how much is 3 times 3? And without hesitating, the guy said, 9. He said, that's terrific. He said, how'd you get that? He said, I subtracted Tuesday from 118. See, you obviously relate to that too, you know. It's like, you know, it just happens, you know. It's like you're there and things are happening, and it's like can't they see the humor in this? You know, did you ever just be in a place where you're watching something that looks real, real funny to you, and no one else sees it? And it's like, you know, it's like you say, wow. You know, like, I guess they don't see it. You know, it's a shame. I mean, they're that sick that they don't see it. You know, like pulling up to the Holland Tunnel in the middle of rush hour and saying, I'll have a hamburger and a milkshake. And the guy says, I'm sorry, we don't have any food here. And you say, well, you better get some. The line's really backing up. You know, like, well, guys who work in the Port Authority don't find that humorous at all. You know, they just don't. And I developed some codependent issues when I was out drinking. I remember saying to people, you know, is my fly open? And they'd say no. And I'd say, well, it should be. I'm peeing. You know? And this is, you know, my mind was just going all the time, you know. I would be thinking of humorous things while I was being fingerprinted, you know, like... Like, does he know who I am? You know? Of course he knew, you know? And how I had no perception of reality. I just had no perception of reality. You know, you're in a holding tank with a bunch of guys that you were in the same holding tank the week before with. And you say things like, geez, there's that same guy again. You think he's shaped up. You know, it's like, this guy must really be dense. He just doesn't understand. He's constantly getting in trouble. And not realizing that you knew them first name. You know, like you're there for the same things. And when I came to AA and somebody said to me, you don't ever have to feel out of step with you again, I thought, well, I don't think I'm out of step with me now. I think everybody else is out of step. And then as I went through the steps, what the steps did for me, and hopefully they'll do for you, is they allow you to put down, pen to paper, reality. And I found out that fantasy and reality can't exist together. You know, reality is reality. And you get so, you realize that most of my life I made up. You know, I'm amazed that people can remember, like, the first drink they had, the last drink they had. If I knew I was going to be talking at AA, I would have taken some notes, you know. You know, most of my drinking I don't remember. And the stuff I remember most vividly never happened. So, it's like you don't have a lot to work with. You know, you have limited input. And I remember, you know, I get to see a lot of people in your group away from here. I get to see them at conventions and so forth. And so when I come here and I see them, I realize that you guys are a Pacific group. When I see you outside of here, you're just individuals. And then when I come here, you're part of this group. And I got to see people who have moved here from other areas. You know, I'm connected with Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know a lot about a lot of other things. I just know that when I'm in an AA meeting, I feel good. And I just know that when I leave there, I feel even better. And that happens on a continual basis. And I get to a point where there's just a peace in my life. There's a peace that's never been there before. And I think it's the peace of knowing about this impermanence. I mean, once I became aware of the fact that everyone and everything will at some point in my life be taken away from me, or I'll be taken away from it, it changed the game entirely. It made me very astute as to the fact that I want to tell the people that I love them when I'm with them, and I don't want to spend a lot of nonsense time talking about other things. I want to be focused on what's really real, because I see how important it is. You know, I have the kind of mind that when something is good, I want to hold on to it. And when it's bad, I want to get rid of it. But impermanence works in the sense that everything changes. And thank God it does. Otherwise, we'd be having slogans like, this too shall last. You know? And it won't. You know, it's going to change. It's going to be something else. And what we perceive to be the problem today, next year could be the solution. And you don't know that, but you have to constantly step out and take the action. I have learned to take the action here. I have learned that when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was suffering from a disease called alcoholism. And if I took the steps would keep me from getting sick from my disease. And so I constantly went through the steps. And I did those maintenance steps all the time. And I began to open a contact with the God of my understanding. And you know, today I spend more and more time in meditation without having a special place for it. I've made meditation a part of my life. Hopefully I'll meditate all the time, no matter what I'm doing. Right now when the phone rings and I go to pick up the phone, I let it ring an extra time. And while it's ringing that extra time, I say to myself, thank you, God, for the gift of sobriety and for keeping me sober today. And it reminds me, I'm in the now. I'm in the present. This phone call is a phone call. I'll be much better picking it up having said that, and whoever I'm dealing with on the other end will be better off that I said that. And I'm at a red light, I can say at a red light, thank you, God, for the gift of sobriety. Thank you for allowing me to live in this moment. Thank you for all you do for me. And I constantly remind myself to engage in the present moment, because I have that tendency, without a whole lot of work on my part, to get living in the future and living in the past and forgetting all about what's going on around me right now. And so it's real important for me to come to meetings and be reminded. It's real important for me to travel with people who know who I am, who know my upside and my downsides, who know that I make mistakes. Today I know how to take care of a mistake when I make it. And you know, I have that piece that was talked about to me by many people in the early days of my recovery. And they used to say, someday, at some point in your life, if you're very lucky, you'll feel a stillness that will allow you to be all that you can be in the moment. And I have felt that stillness. I wish I could sustain it. I can't, but I felt it. And I've learned to do the 10 steps and the 11 steps through prayer and meditation, and I meditate when the phone rings and when I'm at a red light. And what I've learned for me through experience is that I used to think that my thoughts just ran continuously. And now what I found out is there's a stop point on my thought before a new thought begins. There's a little gap there. And through meditation, what I've been able to do is extend that gap, make it wider. And while it's being widened, I get to understand God, because that's where God and I meet. We meet in the stillness of the present moment. I can't meet God tomorrow. I can't meet God yesterday. The book says very clearly to me, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you meet him now. And it's always in the present moment. It also says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. And if God has all the power, it means I don't have any. All I can do is take action. And when my son was going through his deal, trust me, I came to understand the feeling of being powerless. You know, powerless is like being voted most attractive in your cell block. You know, it's you're aware of it, but you don't want to participate, you know. And you get just to be still. And I remember in dealing with my son's mom, my ex-wife, where when we were there, and it was getting down to the point where he was leaving us, he asked if there was anything that he should do. And it was interesting because we both were able to address that as a unit. Even though we didn't live together, even though we were no longer connected in most ways, we were connected through the love of that child. And we were both able to say to him, let go whenever you want, and we're going to be okay. And it's real important to let go of loved ones. And if somebody is in a crisis situation, they usually don't need a lot of advice. All they need is a lot of love. And if they get that love, then everything else seems to work out. I have a real peaceful life today. I can't tell you the changes that have come up in the last 2 or 3 years. I was retired. The company that was paying me went under. They went into bankruptcy. So I went back to work. I mean, am I clever? And everything is went topsy-turvy. And yet, with going topsy-turvy, I just did the drill that I learned in the first few years of my sobriety, and that is I went to my meetings, I kept my commitments, I kept loving the people in my life, and I allowed them to know where I was at. And they were very generous with me because they loved me back. And it's great to be at AA meetings because I don't know where else you can go and share the kind of stuff that we share here. I mean, stop somebody on the freeway and start a conversation. Hey, how's it going with you? They give you half a peace sign because they're really not concerned with how you're doing. You know, it's like and you get so that life calms down a lot for you. I have another son and he's going through some stuff now, and the end result of it is that we're able to talk openly without judgment or evaluation as to what he's experiencing. You know, I never realized that two people can look at the same thing and have an entirely different perception of what took place. I just never knew that. And I'm learning with women now. This is a whole new thing for me. I'm learning the difference between men and women in some areas that I never knew before. Guys, when they share with you, 3 or 4 minutes into the sharing, they want an answer. Help me out. Give me some suggestions. I'm learning that's not true with women. Women have to talk it out. And then they have to talk it out. And then they take a break and they talk it out. And they really don't want you to give them a suggestion. What they want to do is go through the process so they can talk it out, and then they'll know what to do. So you look real clever if you just drink coffee and go, mm-hmm. Right. And you learn hand gestures and things that make it look like you're, you know, like, hey. And then when they get to the answer, they say, thanks. I think, geez, you know, if I had learned this in high school, I'd own the world. You know, I mean, I would... So let it be written, so let it be done. I mean, I would have had a great time, you know. Instead, I never understood that stuff. I just never understood that stuff. I over the last year in particular, I've been in a situation where as I move along, I realize there's things that are never going to be the same in my life again. And there's depths of reality to that. And there's new awakenings all the time. And there are several people in this group that have called me over the last year about loved ones that they've been going through loss with. And it's a finalization. It's a reality. It's something that happens. And you know, it's just like newcomers when they come in. Losing someone to any disease is like watching a newcomer come in. They have no idea what's happening, and they've already had a near-death experience. Almost every newcomer has had some kind of a near-death experience. Had I moved in this direction or that direction, it would have been over. Instead, I ended up in AA. And what we do as a group when they come in is we kind of guide them along on just doing the next indicated thing. Thank God this book is written in the way that it is so that no matter where you're coming from, the answer is in here. I like what the 10 steps says about we cease fighting everyone and everything. It's an amazing thing when you're placed in that position of neutrality. I don't really care how it happens. It's going to be okay. In fact, it is okay. Most of the guys here tonight and who are with me know this fellow Lewis. He's passed away now, but Lewis was 39 years sober, and he never looked like a recovered alcoholic. He looked like he just got there. You know, he wore one red suspender across his chest, and he had flood pants, and he'd wear work boots, and he'd come to the meetings. And I never forget, because during the meetings, the topic meetings, he'd be reading the Reader's Digest. And somebody said to him afterward, Lewis, you're reading the Reader's Digest, and you read those vocabulary words, and then you open the back and you look at the answer. That's not the way it's supposed to be. You're supposed to guess what it is, and then check to see if you're right. And Lewis would say heavy things like, if I know where the answer is, why should I guess? You know? I used to think he was the most clever person I've ever met. Because he never got caught up in the psycho dribble that was going on around him. you know, people would be talking about making a decision, and they would say, you know, I go up and I inventory and I call my sponsor and I go to a seminar and I read, you know, and it must take them a half hour to do all that stuff. And you say to Lewis, what would you do? And he'd reach in his pocket and pull out a silver dollar and he'd say, I'm Lewis. When I have a decision to make, I flip this coin. Heads, I do it this way. Tails, I do it that way. I'm 39 years sober. It doesn't matter. And you say, geez, you know, like, sit down, let's close the meeting. You know, like, Lewis knows what's going on. You know? He knows what's going on. Now, these lights, I think, mean I'm supposed to return to my seat. We're going through the turbulence. Let's all put our seatbelts on. Stay in our seats until it passes. I want to thank you for letting me come up here tonight. Being up here was a real treat for me. It was even a treat coming up with the people I came up with because we're connected in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you guys seem to be connected in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And don't get caught up in all the fractional stuff that seems to come into AA on different occasions. Just remember that we have a big book. And that book says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. God bless you.
This is the end of side one. Stop the tape at this point and turn the cassette over to hear side two.